Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Chicago has a long history of being the home for many amazing and interesting people and places. But I bet you didn't know it's also home to one of the longest-running feminist bookstores in the country. The store was founded nearly 50 years ago by two grad students who were frustrated with the small selection of women's literature that they found in bookstores, and they decided to change that. Today on the podcast, we dig into the history and impact of the bookstore, Women and Children First, in Chicago's Andersonville neighborhood. I sat down with one of the store's co-founders, Linda Bubin, as well as the store's current owners, Sarah Hollenbeck and Lynn Mooney. Linda starts by sharing why she and co-founder Ann Christofferson decided to open Women and Children First.
We were motivated by a number of factors, the first of which you mentioned, not being able to find women's literature, contemporary women's literature. You know, yes, you could find Jane Austen, but not writers who were making a difference in the women's movement. As graduate students, we'd been invited to a seminar of our teachers at the Newberry Library, and we were meeting to discuss recent women's books, and we had a hard time finding them. So that was a big motivation. The other was, what were we going to do with our careers with master's and English degrees? And PhDs were, you know, getting sent to Oklahoma and North Dakota to teach, and that didn't sound good. And the master's students were teaching and being exploited. And Anne and I had a personal relationship, and we wanted to protect that and to live that out loud. And as academics, we would not have been able to. So we decided, you know, let's start our own business. And the only thing we really knew much about was literature.
Yeah, you knew a ton about that.
Yeah, I had been a waitress for many years to support my academic career, so I knew about people. And she had taught at the seventh grade level, so she knew a little bit about children's books. And we put our heads together and said, we want to feature women's literature and books that are of interest to women. It was hard to find books on pregnancy.
Really?
It was hard to find books on women's health at all.
And we're talking about, what, the
70s? 1979 was when we opened, and we spent, you know, a year or two preparing and visiting other feminist bookstores. Room of One's Own in Madison, which is still existing, was one of our role models. And Anne spent a day up there with the owner, kind of learning the ropes. I worked as a volunteer for Chicago Now before we opened, because I wanted to know sort of what feminist political happenings were going on. And Anne worked at a bookstore downtown for the summer before we opened and met some people who had years of experience and coached us.
I mean, so this was a lifestyle for you as well as a business, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And your store, it became this safe haven for LGBTQ plus women specifically.
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is, on a Saturday morning, I was walking into work after having worked a late shift at the restaurant the night before, kind of dragging my tail to the store. And I saw two women walk out the door, and they were holding hands, and they were laughing, and they were swinging their hands as they walked down the street. And I thought, that's because they were in that space that said it was okay.
A safe space.
Yeah. We also wanted to educate children about their bodies. You know, sexual assault was a huge issue in the women's movement, and it still is and should be. But protecting children and giving children the information they needed to be strong themselves, that was a part of the mission, too.
Yeah. Well, you and Ann Christofferson eventually sold Women and Children First in 2014. And you did that to current co-owners of the bookstore, who are Sarah Hollenbeck and Lynn Mooney. They are with us now here in studio as well. So let's bring them into the conversation. Absolutely. Hey, Lynn and Sarah.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Sasha. So glad to be here.
You know, as you're listening to Linda recount some of that history, how are you feeling, Lynn?
Proud and inspired all over again. And also just reminded at how important the work is and also how many facets it involves.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously curate the book selection we have in the store. We're very careful and deliberate about the programming we do, the author events we host, and other kinds of projects and programming. But it really is about the people and their trust in us, and we have to continue to earn that every day.
What about you, Sarah? What comes to mind listening to Linda go back down memory lane?
I was a customer of Linen and Children First before I was a bookseller and then a co-owner. And the reason I loved the space was I'm a disabled woman, and when I walked in the door at Linen and Children First, no one batted an eye. I felt respected, cared for, attended to, and fully seen in my body, and I loved it. I immediately felt at home, and I felt safe, and I wanted to preserve that, and I'm so glad that we could continue that legacy that Anne and Linda started.
Yeah. Linda, tell us more about how you picked these two as the next owners.
I'm often asked what I'm proudest of, and that would be it. That Anne and I very conscientiously and deliberately made an exit plan for ourselves as we were getting older. And, you know, 35 years in, it's a long time to do that work, and it's physical. It's very physical work. I mean, it's intellectual, but it's very physical. So we knew it was time for us to step down and get some new blood, energy, vision into the store.
Yeah.
And we spent a year vetting and reviewing, and we had finally 8 serious offers, 8 different parties, and we spent a long time with each of them, interviewing them. And then we went home and we made a list of the qualities we want in the new owners.
And you found that in Lynn and Sarah.
And we found it in them. We both went home. Anne and I went separately home. We had narrowed it down to 3, and we had our checklist, and they just stood out above the rest.
Yeah.
There was such comfort, reassurance in knowing that we had worked with them.
Yeah.
And that they were both hard workers, which is absolutely essential.
Right.
Not unlike Anne and I, they had very different personalities, very different strengths and weaknesses. And we thought that as a team, they could really carry Women and Children First into the next.
And for this next iteration, too, those
yes.
qualities were probably much needed. Women and Children First, Lynn, it opened during the second wave of the feminist movement, right? So talk to us about how it's evolved and how you've retained that feminist mission.
Well, first I have to say Anne and Linda had done so much right, and it was such an honor to be picked to bring the store forward into the next generation. And I think, I hope one of the things that they valued was that Sarah and I were committed to continuing the store as a feminist bookstore, that there was no way that we would sort of cave in and make it a general bookstore, that this really was in our DNA too. But Anne and Linda maybe didn't know how hard they were going to work for so long. And I think we brought some fresh energy. And a new set of eyes is always valuable. We looked at the mission. We decided to really focus on intersectional feminism, trans-inclusive feminism, anti-racist work, and also work around the disability community. And that would be kind of the prongs of our work going forward. I would add that more recently, another prong there has been our work trying to be the best feminist workplace we can be.
Okay.
And that's hard work too.
How do you approach that? Trying to be the best feminist workplace.
Some of it is about being
rather.
Sharing power. Some of it's about being transparent. Some is also about giving staff working conditions that make being a bookseller viable and sustainable for them as a career if they want to.
Yeah. Say more on that, Sarah, as well as that approach to intersectionality that Lynn brought up.
Sure. Yeah, I'm so proud of the fact that we have several booksellers on staff who have been with us for 5 years or more, which is very unusual in the retail space. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to the work that we've done, which has been very, very collaborative. We are now doing more decision-making by consensus, all staff consensus, and that's been a hard struggle, but I think very worthwhile in terms of living in the politics, the intersectional feminist politics mm-hmm. that we strive towards. We know in the summer of 2022, we committed to pay a living wage according to the MIT calculator, and that was a huge risk, but we decided that it was a risk that we had to take in order to be the store that we say we are in our mission statement.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a challenge, but it's worthwhile.
You know what I also can't help but think about is that this current wave of book bans, you know, particularly affecting authors of color and books with LGBTQ plus themes, right? You're all nodding because you know what I'm talking about. How do you navigate that, Lynn?
It's a moving picture. We're trying to engage and be involved in as many ways as we can. One of my current passion projects is we started a banned books book group, and a fellow bookseller and I co-lead that, and we're trying to do some interesting things. The conversations have been amazing and robust. We are choosing books to read that alternate between books that have been kind of banned and challenged forever, for decades, the 1984, the Fahrenheit 451s, those kinds of books,
yeah.
But alternate with newly published books like All Boys Aren't Blue, or, you know, books by Ruta Sepeti, or Beyond Magenta. And the group, it's become a really great group of sophisticated readers. In our discussions, we talk about everything from how critical these books are to their target audience reader. I mean, sometimes life and death critical mm-hmm. for those young readers. But also, I love the idea that there are more people out there that when these books come up in conversation can say, oh, hey, I've read that book. I've right. thought a lot about it, and here's why I think it's important. And I love being part of there being more of those people out in the world.
You know, part of the legacy, as you mentioned, Linda, was this focus on children, right? And mm-hmm. we see it right there in the name. So talk more about why you decided to stock so many children's books off the bat.
Right. Well, we said to ourselves, where there are women, there are children in their lives. And, you know, both of us having been teachers, we knew that teachers love books, and teachers buy books for their children, for their classroom. We knew that it was the beginning of the second wave. Not all women identified as feminists. In fact, the F word, it was a joy to me to see in the 2000s that words like feminism and patriarchy were no longer bad words.
My, how times have changed.
Yes. But at that time, the books for children that were available were very mainstream, very white. You never saw mixed race families. We had so many mixed race families that came in this store. Mm-hmm. There were no books for them. And we had to, you know, we advised people to take a brown crayon to these books.
Yeah.
And whenever new books were published, I was thinking recently how great it is that we have maintained Black History Month and Women's History Month because publishers publish books specifically for those months.
Yeah.
And since those months were established in the late 90s, the amount of children's picture books that feature Black families and Black heroes and heroines right down to the board book level now. You know, it's really exciting to me to see that.
Yeah.
And women's history, I mean, you couldn't find a picture book biography. They were so institutional, you know, so school mm-hmm, library-ish.
Mm-hmm. You know, and as you talk about, you know, women and children, that relationship, I'm thinking about the fact that you also, at some point in your journey, you intentionally decided to become a single parent. And
yes.
you raised your son up in that bookstore.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And he was not a good toddler.
I know a thing or two about that. My kids have, I say I've raised them up in newsrooms, right?
And so
they can't stand coming into newsrooms now. Well, hopefully, you know, he likes books.
His first year of life was in the bookstore.
Okay.
I had a baby seat that I would put in the front window so he could watch people walking by. We had a playpen in the middle of the store so that women with babies in arms could put them down for a minute. You know, just, I mean, I know playpens are not politically correct anymore, but to walk into a retail store and know you want to use your hands and look at stuff and you've got a baby strapped to you, it was hard, especially when they start walking.
Yes.
So it was when he started walking that I had to find
childcare. Well, speaking of childcare, I hear you are now helping care for Sarah's child.
Oh, it's a joy of my life.
That is. Sarah, yes. Tell us about that.
Yes. I have a 2-year-old named Lila, and childcare is hard to come by.
Yeah.
And we are so fortunate that Linda has wanted
and your dad.
And my dad. But Linda has always wanted to be a grandmother. So she was so generous with her time from an early age for Lila.
2 months.
To come over and help support us as we, you know, do what all modern parents do, which is a piecemeal together a childcare plan that's affordable and sustainable. It is a beautiful synthesis to have Linda in our lives to support our bring a child into the world.
That is so wonderful. You're not just, this is not just a business relationship. I mean, this is a family for sure.
Yes.
Leave us with this, Lynn. I mean, what do you think is the place of feminist bookstores in the current moment, 45 years later?
I think they're pivotal and critical. I think to a large extent, the larger conversation has caught up with us and is challenging us in new ways to be relevant and to lead.
What are you reading right now? I got to know this before I let you all go.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
I knew you would light up.
I'm so glad you asked.
I've got a few seconds left. Tell us, Linda, what are you reading?
Everybody should read The Waters by Bonnie Jo Campbell.
Mm. Okay, Sarah?
The Great Divide by Christina Enriquez, a local author about the building of the Panama Canal.
Nice. And Lynn?
One of my recent favorites is The Wren by Anne Enright, which is about several generations of women holding the older men in their lives to account.
We've been speaking with Linda Bubin, who's co-founder of Women and Children First and current co-owners of the bookstore, Sarah Hollenbeck and Lynn Mooney. Thank you all so much and great recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about interesting places and people in the Chicago area, make sure to subscribe and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.